With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Music Nomad, our favorite guitar maintenance tool manufacturing masters. You should check them out on musicnomadcare.com or on social media with @musicnomadcare. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Blake Weiland.
Hello, I'm back. I didn't know I was going to be back so soon.
Yes, well, neither did I, but you are back. You are back because, of course, dear listener, as I'm sure many of you are aware, if you're on our Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, it was Matt Knight, podcast host Matt Knight's wedding this weekend just gone, and we had a wonderful time. We did like a podcast best man speech. Mark Packham, Jake Cross, and me were the best men. We had to do a speech and everything, and of course, we only record this like the day after. You know, well, the Saturday was the wedding. Sunday we were still, you know, we had to go around and have whatever coffee with Matt at the mansion they'd hired and things like that. So now we're back, but Jay is in terrible shape. Mark Packham only really does Patreons anymore, and so Blake, you have come to the rescue and agreed to double up with me for another episode.
Absolutely, because those people, they were just too weak to make it. That's what we've discovered. They were just too weak. They weren't strong like you. They didn't have the fortitude, mentally or physically, to withstand the onslaught of podcasting, and therefore you had to call in the pinch hitter, you know?
Exactly. I don't know what a pinch hitter is, but it sounds important.
In the game of baseball, you know, if you've got the bases loaded and you really need to... I don't even watch baseball. How do I know this term?
Right. I see. Bases are loaded. You need someone who's going to smash the ball so that you can unload those bases.
Exactly. So you call in the, you know, you call in the Babe Ruth. Like, come on.
Right.
Drive this thing home. Yep.
That makes sense. I want to get into baseball. I've been thinking recently, like, you know, this is a sport I want to get into. So I'm finding more and more, like, you know, I only really care about vintage things, right? You know, it applies to all guitar gear, amps, pedals, guitars, and I'm getting more and more obsessed with that stuff. You know, I only wear like pre-owned brogues, and I do most of my clothes shopping in vintage shops. So I was like, yeah, I really need to follow this through to sports, because of course I follow the football, but I'm like, guys, I can't really wear a football shirt out and about, because I wouldn't wear something, you know, as sort of shiny and modern as that. So I was thinking, I know, I need to find a sport that has kept hold of some of its vintage roots. And the only one, really, is baseball. Like, you still get awesome shirts. They're still, like, got proper hickory bats. You know, it looks great. It looks 50s still, you know.
Baseball is a very aesthetically pleasing sport in that sense. I actually wear a lot of baseball tees, you know, with the three-quarter length sleeves.
Oh, yes.
A lot of bands have started making those, and those are some of my favorite styles of shirts because they're very comfortable, and I just like how they look.
Yeah.
But I must say, baseball, well, let's put a caveat on this. I am not a big sports person. Right. Usually when there are balls involved, I like basketball, but that's largely nostalgia driven for me because I grew up watching basketball with my parents and my grandparents. But baseball, while I really appreciate the aesthetics and the everything that you're kind of hinting at there, the thing is in general, it is very hard to get into because it's very slow. And you have to be committed. It's almost as bad as golf, as far as like
or cricket for us. I mean, cricket's, you know, they had to make a short version of cricket that only lasts one day. You know, that's how long cricket. I mean, that's true. It only lasts one day rather than however long it lasts. You know, three or four. So this sounds not as bad as that. I know it's long, but isn't that to work in the customary refreshments, you know, the beers and hot dogs and things?
That's true. It's kind of a weird thing because I talk about this a lot in regards to content and social media. I, in general, prefer podcasts because I like long-form content. I don't really care about TikTok videos because I'm old and they're too short to have any real substance for me. But when it comes to sports, I like things that move fast. I like to watch boxing. Right. I like to watch, you know, a little bit of MMA here and there. I like to watch things where there's lots happening. I like Strongman. Strongman's a lot of fun to watch. Like, things that are slow with sports don't hold my attention very well, and I tend to fall off. But for important games, I could be bothered. You know, for something that if I'm in the right mood with the right people and in the right environment, I could get into it.
I see. Well, yeah. I mean, I've never been to a game, and I really want to go to a game. My girlfriend Emma, she works for an American company, and their head offices are in Dallas. And last time she was there, she went to a baseball game, and it just sounds great. Like, you know, she turned up. And they gave her a shirt, like, you know, the baseball shirt. You just get one of those. It's like in football, if you want the sort of latest kit, that's £60 just for the shirt. You know, separately. You just turn up at a baseball game and included in the ticket price, you get a shirt. That's great.
It was included in the ticket price?
Yes,
or did she launched out of a cannon? That happens too. They launch shirts out of cannons into the crowd. You know,
it may have been something like that, but that sounds great. It sounds like they've really got you covered, you know. Get to see a sports game, get free fashion clothes.
I will say this much. I have both watched baseball games on TV and attended. Attending them is a completely different, well, here's the pun, ball game, than actually watching it on TV. Watching it on TV kind of sucks, but watching it in real life, even though it's the exact same game, so much more fun.
It doesn't even compare.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see. Well, there you go. I'm going to try and get into it. I think I'm going to support the Philadelphia Phillies, just because I have a friend who follows baseball who is from Philadelphia and supports them. It's Jay Cross's girlfriend Maddie, and I figure I need to support someone who I know someone else who supports them in order that, you know, I can watch the games with and. Get behind the hype, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to get into it, you might as well, you know, go for your friend's team. That way you have the immediate community experience.
Exactly. But there you go. As I say, all to do with my growing obsession with vintage stuff, which, you know, we might talk about a bit on this podcast. The time has come on this week's podcast to hear some gear, so let's check out some of the complete amplification and effects solutions available from Neural DSP and their plugins. We've teamed up with Neural DSP a bunch over the last year or two. Matt and I are big fans of what they do, and we'd like you to become a part of that. So use discount code, that's right, it's a discount code, GuitarNerds at neuraldsp.com for 30%, a whopping 30% off of any of their plugins. It's worth noting that you get a 14-day free trial with any of their plugins with no credit card required. So if you just want to see what all the fuss is about, you've got a whole 2 weeks
on them with any of their amps and effects. Now, this week, I'm checking out the Omega Ampworks Granifier plugin suite. Now, Neural DSP described this suite as providing everything from dirty blues to crushing metal. This dark horse is sure to surprise you, and it sure did surprise me. I'm buzzing whilst I'm recording this little ad. It's such a simple suite. It's one amp head based on the Omega Ampworks Granifier, one pedal, which the Earthquaker device's Plumes, and yet I'm probably going to switch to using this amp for everything. The depth of tone, the articulation, the great low gain and high gain tones, the massive amount of fantastic artist and Neural DSP presets. It gave me a surprisingly vast collection of drive tones that I think are literally going to cover me for everything I do. Here's a track I built using only presets from the Omega suite. The Omega Ampworks Granifier plugin suite from Neural DSP. Check it out on neuraldsp.com and use discount code GuitarNerds at the checkout for 30% off any of their amp and effects plugins.
Absolutely. I'm actually going down because I'm in the middle of trying to acquire a decent bit of a camera kit, and I have been going down the vintage lens rabbit hole. Ooh. And it is quite appealing to my nerdery. I'm really enjoying this exploration. I haven't gotten anything yet, but I'm really enjoying it's like, it reminds me of the first time that I found out about pedals, and you really start going down the rabbit hole of learning about pedals from a total newbie perspective. I'm finding the same thing with lenses right now. So
that sounds expensive.
If you think the guitar's expensive, woohoo! I was reading a review on a $2,000 camera today, talking about how this is pretty good for a budget camera. I'm like, oh, what am I getting into? This is not good. I am not made of this kind of money. Ugh. So, yeah.
I was. You forget when you're so involved in it. Like at Matt's wedding, we were introduced to one of Matt's now wife Amy's friends. You know, because he's in guitar, and they were like, oh yeah, you have lots in common. We were like, yeah, he was a very nice fellow. We were chatting about guitars, and he was like, what do you think's the best, you know, I'm looking for something new, you know, maybe something Strat like, you know, what do you think is a new affordable model out at the moment? And I'm sort of saying, well, you know, a lot of people are into this new SE Silver Sky, because of course, you know, it's less than £1,000, which is good. And he was like, whoa, I don't think I've ever spent more than £250 on a guitar. And I said, oh, of course. because unless you're really into it. I'm like, oh, because by budget, I think you mean just not custom shop. That's all that
right.
means.
Yes.
but yes, it's you've got to realize that we are the weirdos. Yeah.
This is the Guitar Nerds podcast after all. So, you know, yeah, it's a difficult thing when you're talking to people who aren't as deep into it as we are. And that same thing, what do you think a good budget guitar is?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm like, you know, the Squires are pretty good. They're, you know, around $500. And like, people are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I said budget. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. This is not the early 2000s anymore. But on the on the good side of things, even though things are more expensive, the lower end guitars, price wise, have never been better. So that's what's awesome about the current guitar market.
It is so, it's a totally different world from even like, you know, when I started working in guitar shops. So, you know, even just you take sort of the early 2000s or 2010 around this, so maybe 2000 to 2010, you think about what was on offer for entry level musicians at that point in time. Like, Epiphones were bad at that time. That was not a good time for Epiphone. And you think the Squires were, there were no vintage mods. There were no, you know, classically inspired ones. So no classic vibe, no vintage modified. It was Affinity or Standard. And they were, you know, bad's the wrong word. They were very, very budget. You know, the colors were very boring. The lacquer was very thick. The pickups were very bland. You know, even you think about the Mexican Standard Rage at that point, the colors were terrible in Mexican Standard and the pickups really sounded awful. You know, what were the pickups? Oh, it doesn't matter, but you know, they were not good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, yeah, like you and I had anything to do with it. The market has really upped its game in all areas of the price range, I think, but especially at the lower end. And I think that's awesome for newer players, which does actually segue somewhat decently into something I wanted to talk to you about. Have you seen I think it was a tweet or it was an interview or something that Noel Gallagher did recently talking about how rock has gone middle class and there won't be an Oasis-like band ever again? Because
I saw the headline. You know, it's kind of sad. You expect him to say something like offensive every 6 months, every year or so. Every time people forget him, you know, he'll say something offensive in the news to sort of try and be remembered again.
But yeah, it was. I mean, usually I'm very annoyed with him, and I see his name in the headline, and I'll scroll on past really fast because I'm like not interested. But he had some good points, and he wasn't just talking about gear and whatnot. He was saying there are no more practice spaces. They've all turned into restaurants or something. There are no more, you know, places for people from public housing to pick up instruments and go and learn to play. And
right, I see.
I got to thinking about it, and I don't know if maybe things are different over there than it was over here, but in my mind, it's been like that since I picked up a guitar. It has always been that way. We never had any practice spaces other than whatever we could borrow from a friend or family member temporarily, you know? It's like, oh, is your dad's paint shop available today? No, he's got a bunch of cabinets in there he's painting. Are your parents home today? Can we set up in the living room? You know, like, I don't know. There were never any practice spaces, but I have no... no delusions about the fact that me and my friends definitely grew up middle class, you know, and
right.
And so, and we had access to, you know, cheaper gear, but we, you know, we got it for gifts, or we were able to mow a bunch of lawns and buy it that way. We had the opportunity to be able to acquire that stuff. And I wonder if maybe he's right, but it's actually been that way for longer than what most people think.
Guitar Nerds are sponsored by Reverend Guitars, and we're pretty happy about that. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, you'll know that we've been big fans of Reverend for years now, and we're continually impressed by the constant stream of new guitars and basses they bring to the table. The things that stand out to me is their signature range. Reverend have a roster of really interesting top-notch players who all seem to bring something completely unique to their signature model. None more so than the legend Greg Koch, now on his second guitar, the Gristle 90, following the Gristle Master. The Gristle 90 is a beautiful, tasteful blend of a classic T-style guitar with Firebird-esque aesthetic and a pair of wildly articulate P90s courtesy of Fishman and their Fluence series of pickups. It's a versatile, modern instrument with gorgeous alternate dimension classic looks, great color options, and quality buildsmanship. Check it out and the entire range at reverendguitars.com.
Yeah, I guess so. It is tricky. Like, Brighton is such a ridiculous music hub. You know, you think we've got two universities in Brighton that both do music subjects, and then you've got two separate, specifically music and guitar focused colleges here as well. So there are an awful lot of rehearsal spaces, including Brighton Electric, which I mention often on the podcast, but I think is one of the most amazing rehearsal spaces, you know, probably anywhere. It's a converted old bus depot, so it's got maybe 10 rooms in there, a bar, a venue, two recording studios, and it's you know, it's quite an amazing place, which is, it's always the who's who of whatever's on BBC Radio 1 this week as well. You know, there's always cool stuff, and like The Cure have a residency room there and stuff, so it's, that is a wonderful place that I've, you know, been rehearsing in for the best part of 15 years. And so I guess this town is sport for choice, but certainly if you were to go more suburban, I imagine there are less, but I can't speak from experience because I've always, you know, before I was in Brighton, I was in London and there were plenty of rehearsal spaces there as well. So I guess suburbia doesn't have it, but yeah, I agree with you. Maybe wasn't that always the case? You know, whenever were there studios or, I don't know, government funding for this sort of thing? There's, you know, it's always been pretty limited, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, and his point was just that gear was out of reach for a lot of people in those scenarios. And I can see, like, normally I just, like I said, I just have to write off whatever he says because I generally view it as nonsense. But in this case, I think he has some solid points. But, you know, I do have a guitar. I think it just comes down to how bad do you want to do it, you know? Yeah. I do have a guitar that I love that was $30 and I still own it. You know,
there you go. The Squire Bullet Mustang, even if you're shopping, you know, new, the Squire Bullet Mustang is definitely accessible and affordably priced. And it's a very good guitar, which thankfully, because it's Fender, because all of those parts are upgradable, if you want, it's something that can stay with you as you upgrade your interest in guitars. You can upgrade that model with you.
Yeah. I think you do just have to, you know, you do have to dig, you know. I'm now taking my brain on a time traveling vacation here and going back to when I was, you know, 14 and trying to figure out how to buy a guitar, you know. Fortunately, you know, I had my basic needs totally covered, so I didn't have to worry about that. I could spend time obsessing over how to acquire instruments, but it wasn't like, you know, I mean, going back to how we started this conversation, $200 might as well have been $2,000 back then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So I think we might have talked about this a bit the last time you were on. But what were some of the What was some of the like entry level gear that was around your side of the pond when you were like cutting your teeth on guitar? Like, because, you know, I feel like there's always a really standard range of gear that everyone goes through as their first set of stuff, like amps that are loud enough to gig and instruments that are affordable enough to buy for people starting out. What were like the maybe just the guitars and the amps that people had when you were cutting your teeth?
Oh, there's a lot of Epiphone bolt-on Les Pauls. A lot of that. That was everyone had that. Everyone had a Line 6 Spider of some variety, or had access to one. And a lot of Crate solid state stuff, which is actually, I still own my first amp, and it's a Crate solid state XT120. And for what it is, it's actually a great amp. Right. It's like, it's really loud. It does that. It doesn't do the, you know, middle crunch thing very well, but it does clean very well. And it does like that early 2000s metalcore scooped thing very well. It doesn't do in between very well, but
is it solid state?
It's solid state. Yeah.
It's so funny, isn't it? Because I feel like older, affordable amps actually don't sound bad because no one was doing Class D yet. So the solid state stuff actually sounds much better than I think affordable amps probably do today.
Well, speaking of affordable amps that sound awesome, I just was gifted a PV Pacer solid state
Pacer?
Amp.
I have never heard of that. I'm going to have to...
So it's from the same line of amps as the now famous PV Decade.
Right.
So it's from that same era, and it features, from what I understand, the same preamp section. I think all of those amps from that series, for the most part, share a similar preamp section. And then they just swapped out different power sections and speakers and cabs. So this one is a 100-watt single 12 combo, and it sounds really good. I'm like, what is going on here? And then I plugged it into my old Orange 212, and I literally was laughing because I was like, this sounds so good. I cannot believe what I'm hearing right now. This is so insane.
I'm looking at it. It looks like you've just got volume, a 3-band EQ. Is there a reverb? Is that
there
reverb?
Is a reverb.
Oh my goodness.
Reverb. Yeah.
And then two inputs for no reason.
Yeah. Well, mine has the volume and overdrive, 3-band EQ, reverb, and a master volume.
Oh, I see. There's an extra switch on your one. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so here we go. I found one. Yes. I found one with the overdrive as well. Oh.
Yeah. Sounds great. I can't believe how good this amp sounds. It's so ridiculous. Chris Benson from Benson Amps, I was over at his shop, and he was like, do you want this? I'm like, no, not really. He's like, well, it's just kind of in my way. Why don't you take it? And I was like, well, then it'll be in my way. And he's like, honestly, it sounds really good. And I was like, all right, I'll take it. I'll make some stupid content with it or something. And I plugged it in. I was like, you weren't kidding. This thing is brilliant. Like, what? Why does it sound so good? It has no business sounding that good.
Why don't you get it retolexed and, like, you know, get it looking all boutiquey, and then no one will be able to tell.
I like how ragged it is. It's got a giant hole ripped right down the middle of the grill cloth, and like it looks like it should sound horrible, honestly. And the fact that it doesn't makes me so happy.
Hello and welcome back to One Hot Minute, the segment where each week I take a minute of your podcast listening time to demo a piece of gear that I'm excited about. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking about the KMA Chief Disruptor. It's a Swiss Army knife, Big Muff style fuzz. I'm going to talk about it again this week. Once again, this week I've built an entire track using this pedal. It's so versatile. It's so much more than just a fuzz. It's everything from a low-gain drive to a fuzz, to a vintage fuzz, to a modern fuzz, to a Coctoir. It does it all thanks to a separate mid-switching foot switch, three voices of fuzz, and of course the clean blend, which just makes it very versatile for any guitar. This week I've used it for everything, the bass and the guitars, to build a little track. I've used it for all the lead lines, the octave chords, just the palm muted chords going on. It does every single type of drive. Each time I'm running just into a clean Corey Wong Neural DSP plugin, nothing more. So let's give the track a listen and see what you think just about how versatile and fantastic this fuzz really is. Chief Disruptor, a Swiss Army knife fuzz that's so much more than just a fuzz, so capable of everything from just a touch of drive right up to doom. I absolutely love it. Check it out, kma-machines.com, or you know, at your local guitar shop. Well worth taking a punt on, I think. Now back to the podcast.
But I have thought about pulling the amp chassis out and putting it in a head form, because I right. think I'm gonna exclusively use it with other cabs after hearing how good it sounded through that orange. I just it's so ridiculous. And then I posted it, and some people were like, oh, those are garbage. I'm like, well, you know, I don't know, if it sounds good, it is good, and it sounds good to me, so I'll probably have to do a video on it at some point.
Yeah, it's lovely when you get those. It's lovely when you get things like that. Like, I used to have this this Tysco bass amp, which was my first bass amp. There was lots of sort of random tight, like 70s Tysco amps that were going around eBay in like the early, super early 2000s.
Yeah,
but I never appreciated it for what it was, like, for being a big, like, 100-watt solid-state bass combo. That's cool, and I bet it did sound great. I just had no idea. And, of course, I remember being at that age, like, lusting after the Line 6 Spider bass combo. As if, you know,
of course, oh, yes.
That would be the upgrade, you know, rather than this awesome, like, vintage Tysco thing from the 70s that I didn't like because it was old. You know, and right. back then you thought new stuff was the solution.
That isn't that funny how that happens, especially with guitarists. Like, you're young, you're coming up, and you're like, oh, then I gotta try that brand new
Variax.
Variax with that crank amplifier. It's gonna be the best. and then you're like, you get just not too much beyond that. Once you've been playing for, you know, 5-ish years, and if you do go down the gear tone rabbit hole, you find everybody talking about, oh no, what you really want is an old Tweed Deluxe. And it's like, wait, what? I'm so confused. But I remember the first time I plugged into a tube amp, which was an Orange Tiny Terror, and I was like, I've been doing everything wrong. Like, I didn't understand that a guitar could feel and sound that way. And that was really a turning point for me.
Really? Was that like is the Tiny Terror like a real game changing point in your guitar history?
Absolutely. Yeah. The first time I plugged into that and just strummed a some sort of power chord, I was like, oh, this is what the internet's been talking about. Like, this is why.
Did you buy one?
I didn't end up buying one. I was actually testing it for a friend. I tend to do this once I get into something. I immediately hit the internet and was just researching, trying to find what I wanted. And I know why that's entertaining, and I know why people do it and everything. But the real answer is instead of doing that, I should have just went around to various guitar stores and plugged a bunch of stuff in and seen what I liked, because I definitely got misled a few times by internet forums by people saying like, oh, that old Sovtek amp, those suck. Or, oh, those old Ampeg amps, they didn't sound good. And I now own a 65 Ampeg J12 that I absolutely love. I've played some of the Sovtek stuff. Cool. They sound great. And it's like, you can't go entirely off of forum speak. So forum speak kind of talked me out of the Tiny Terror. I was like, oh, maybe I need more wattage. The answer is just go to the guitar store and plug a bunch of stuff in, see what you like, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, like all of this, as with every single piece of gear ever, it's completely subjective. And, you know, someone, a Tiny Terror is not going to do particular genres very well. And so anyone who's coming from that area is, you know, not going to like a Tiny Terror. And it's the same with any amp. Nothing's really a design for everything. So there's always going to be haters.
Yep. Don't listen to the haters. Test it out. That's what I say.
Exactly. I was gonna ask for your assistance, because on the amp front, I love the Boss Katana 100 that I have here. It's really good. It's very good. I got the Katana 200. It's great. I guess I've been playing the Grez a lot more recently, and I love that guitar, and I guess I want something a bit posher, a bit more boutique. I don't want to go over the top with spending money on a small amplifier, but I want something. It doesn't have to be all singing and dancing like a Katana. I use the Katana for like clean-ish edge of breakup with a bunch of reverb. Like that's it. That's all I use it for. So I need an amp to do that. But I was just like, maybe I want something a bit nicer than the Katana. And my my Tweed Blues Junior is I was actually selling it, and then I sort of plugged it in. And I was like, oh, this does not work properly. So I've got to get that fixed. And I kind of want to sell that as well, because I've had it a long time. I'm very familiar with a blues tuner. I want something new and fun. So I'm looking for suggestions, Blake. I'm looking for like small, nice, small boutique-y. It doesn't have to be weird boutique brands. It can be anything. A good sounding small amplifier that isn't insanely expensive, but I'm happy with expensive.
So let's see, like,
I'm putting you on the spot a bit there.
You are putting me on the spot right now. If I had to choose for something, for what you just described, and these neither of these are cheap, to be fair, but the ones that immediately come to mind are either the Silktone amp, which I've been using a lot. It's really cool. It's kind of classic American voiced, but it uses a KT-88 tube, and it has its own flavor going on. I really love that amp, and it takes pedals obscenely well, and I really like it. Plus, Charles is a fantastic, fantastic dude. That one is one that immediately springs to mind.
Oh, it's very nice, yeah. So what, we got 12 watts. Yeah, so what, like 12 AX7... in the front end, and then a KT-66 and a 5AR4. You know, simple. Oh, the reverb's got a dwell and a mix control.
It does, yes, which is very nice.
That sounds very usable. Very useful.
It is. I always have it on just a little bit, and sometimes, in fact, in some demos I've done, and I've been mid demo, I've been like, whoops, the reverb's on. I gotta turn that off. But yeah, I think it sounds really, really good. I really, really love that amp. And I believe he actually just released a new one that I have not played yet, called the Astro.
Right.
Which is a somewhat condensed version of the original Silktone amp, which is what I have. But sonically, when I was listening to the demos, I was like, that sounds very, very close to the original. And I believe the Astro's a little bit cheaper. So I don't know all the differences. But yeah, there's the original Silktone amp and then the Silktone Astro. And the build quality is very high. I really like mine a lot. So that comes to mind. And then, of course, because I can't not suggest something by my good friend Chris Benson because I have so many of his amps and love everything he makes. The Nathan Jr. might slot in nicely, which is lower wattage than I think what you're probably used to, but it is quite loud at that wattage.
So it's five watts, the Nathan Jr., which is, mm-hmm. It's still reasonable. I've played some fantastic... I've got like a prototype amp that we're working on for Ashdown at the moment, which is 2 watts, and it's like, I swear, it's almost giggably loud. So I think you can get like a good low wattage amp, you know, tonally. They do exist, and actually they tend to fuzz up quite nicely as well.
Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad, and I really think, nerds, you need to check out musicnomadcare.com. We've spoken about all their wonderful guitar maintenance products on the podcast, and I really can't emphasize how important it is to look after your gear and how easy Music Nomad make that for you with things like their how-to advice center and their setup hub. Music Nomad have been around for a little over 10 years, and in that time they've become one of the most recognized brands for guitar tech gear. They're available worldwide in every guitar store you can think to name, and it's for a good reason. All their products are professional grade quality. Every tool and even the cases the tools come in are designed for proper, rugged, on the road use. Make sure you check out what all the buzz is around Music Nomad, as they are redefining and raising the bar for equipment care. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com or follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare.
Yeah, and this one does it in a very smooth way. I was there when it was released, and I helped. I was part of the camera crew shooting videos for it, and it's much louder and much more robust sounding than 5 watts would suggest. It really sounds very full and rich, and it will fuzz out if you want it to, but not in the way that like a Champ does. You know, Champ gets very fuzzy very quickly. This is very, very full and rich sounding.
Ooh, and it has reverb on it as well.
It does. Yes. So those are the two that immediately sprung to my brain when you asked that question.
Yeah, both of these are great suggestions. Maybe this is, I feel like this Benson is maybe more, this is more the sort of thing I'm thinking. I think maybe that's right. Maybe like a really nice, plush, good sounding 5 watt amp. Maybe that is the solution, because realistically, I'm still for gigs probably going to use my Fender Tone Master. So It's the deluxe. So this is a reasonable option. You know, I was thinking about like maybe one of the box shaped Vox AC15s, or maybe one of the, you know, did you ever see the 2-tone AC15s they did, like blue and cream with the TV style mesh? Those they go for like no money. I don't know why. Maybe they sound bad. Maybe they break all the time. I'm not sure. They were like a 2014-ish limited edition run.
They look so good. They look awesome.
And they go for like £400, which is very reasonable.
Oh, I thought of another solution that is much less boutique-y, but I think it's a sleeper.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm always up for a sleeper.
Yeah. I don't think they make them anymore, but the Vox Night Train was a lunchbox head they made back in the day. And my friend Jess got one, and he's used it for years, and it always sounds really good. The one slight change he made, I don't remember which tube, I always forget. He's told me 400 times, but he did replace the preamp tubes with some lower gain ones, and I don't remember which it was, and that just opened that amp all up. Like, it's kind of it broke up too early. It didn't take pedals really well in stock form, but I mean, it did okay. But as soon as he put those lower gain preamp tubes in it, it became such a versatile, awesome sounding little lunchbox amp. Now, it's not quite as posh and vintage looking as what we were kind of discussing before. But as far as like a really cool sounding amp, lower gain preamp tubes in a Vox Night Train will get you places for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and also something that you're absolutely right, it's a sleeper. Like Tim, the guitarist in my band Polymath, he played for a short time a Night Train 50, and we just thought it was fantastic. And of course they obviously they do the 15 inch the 15 watt head. They do the little night train, which is a tiny mini thing. I don't know, like 5 watts, I guess, maybe less. And I think there's a rare combo as well that turns up every now and again.
Really?
But there's a 15. There's actually right now on Reverb in the UK, there is the 15 watt 12 inch combo available for £295.
So much amp for that money. That is, I know, so much it's amp.
Already had a 23% price drop. You know, it actually looks great in a combo form, better than it does in a headphone because you don't get that weird metal grill. I was reading recently that the whole design of the Night Train was based on the train wreck, which I didn't know. They're trying to sound like old train wrecks.
I did not know that either. I had no idea. Yeah. Which makes sense. I don't know why that amp didn't take off. I remember the only reason I didn't end up buying one is because Jess bought one and I didn't want the same amp as him. Like, I was going to buy one, and he ended up getting it, and I was like, well, I got to find something a little different, just so we don't all, because we're all playing in the same band, so it's like, I don't want to sound exactly the same, you know?
Yeah, sure. It was a weird thing. I don't know why they did it. Maybe looks. I think maybe Vox are one of those brands that they keep trying to make modern stuff, and I'm not sure that's what people want from them. I think arguably that's it, but... the Night Train is great. I mean, it has, I would have said it looks weird and modern, but since seeing JD's Fenton Wheel, I'm not sure how you say that, his Fenton Wheel combo from the 60s, I'm like, oh, that looks exactly like a Vox Night Train. So it's in some way inspired by. So, the Night Train 15, this combo, great. You know, you get... It's two channel. It's even two channel. So you've got separate gain controls. You've got a reverb. Oh, it looks like, is there any attenuation? No attenuation, but that's fine. 3-band EQ. Great. A little bright switch. Fine. Perfect.
I'm looking at it in the States right now, and you can find it, the just the head, but all over Reverb for around 300 to 350.
Really?
Yeah. This is such a sleeper. I might just buy one just to have one.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Is that the 15 watt you're looking at?
The 15 watt, yeah, the head.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good old suggestion. Not a bad option at all. I'm not going to buy it right now. I'm going to think on it, but I'm putting that firmly into my my watch list. Oh, this has made me think about, because I guess I was thinking about larger amps. I need to get some 5-watt amps in my life. Maybe I could find like an old Selmer something. Maybe a Marshall Class 5 is the solution.
Maybe.
But you've sort of, I don't know why I wasn't thinking about 5-watt options, but I really feel like that's a route I could go down. I'm gonna look into that.
I think it's always good to have on hand something like that, because you never know when. I mean, I've got a few lower watt options. I have some ridiculously loud amps, and they just sound like the whole world is crashing down when you crank them up. But you don't need that 99% of the time. In fact, it can become a burden. So it's nice to have something that works in the wattage range where you need it for a specific purpose.
Yeah, this is, I'm thinking about something I can put in my lounge for, you know, when I'm sitting around in the evenings, you know, but just noodling around on guitar. I want it to sound great. Because that was the thing. I kind of, I've got the Grez down there next to my girlfriend's piano, and we're trying to do like a, in the evenings, no turning on the telly, no watching Netflix things. We're not going to do that. So we've got this insanely hard 1,000-piece Radiohead puzzle that you can buy off of the Radiohead website. So we're working on that and just sitting around like noodling on guitar in the evenings. I moved the Katana down there and I'm like, yeah, this Katana doesn't look good, you know, like in the lounge with all my nice stuff. It doesn't look good. So that's hence the look for the, you know, the something that's a gorgeous looking, well Tolexed amplifier.
Yeah, in that sense, the Night Train probably won't fit. But
true.
But for how cheap they are, maybe you could make a little project out of him. You can rehouse the amp into something a little classier looking. Maybe
that might be the option. I'm going to think about that. Now, just before we started recording this podcast, but shortly before, you released a new video for a new pedal, another pedal that you've been involved in.
I wasn't really involved in this one. It was more of just, hey, would you like to do a video for this? And I was like, absolutely. So, I did a video for the new Ian Fowles, better known as Eagle Bones Falcon Hawk of the Aquavats. He has a signature overdrive with Rude Tech, and I was asked to do a video for it. And so I put on an Aquabat helmet and mask. And made a ridiculous video. The intro, I'm jamming some heavy riffs through with my baritone, and I decided, you know, it would be really dumb and funny, and maybe it's not funny at all, but I thought it was funny, is if I should announce what this pedal is with a microphone while like yelling through the pedal, so my voice is all distorted and everything. And so I'm yelling and jumping around and screaming about what the pedal is through a distortion pedal into my DAW, and it was a lot of fun, but I wanted to make it silly because, you know, I felt like the Aquabats would appreciate that.
Absolutely. I'm sure they would. So this drive, it looks great. I'm already a big fan of anything that's got a blend control, and it has a blend control, so that's important to me. What's the edge with this drive pedal? What are they going for?
So this is a very cool drive pedal. So it's actually two dirt circuits. So if you take the blend all the way to the left, you're in overdrive mode. If you take it all the way to the right, you're in distortion mode. And the gain volume...
So you're not blending a clean signal in. Oh, this is cool. I like this.
Yeah. So the gain, volume, and tone are all universal. They impact both circuits. And you blend between. You can get all these different textures and flavors. When I first... The first part of the video is really aggressive, like in your face, heavy riffs, high gain. And then later in the video, I spend a lot of time exploring the lower gain sounds, especially in the very beginning and the very end of that portion. And it just sounds, it gets those just glassy edge of breakup tones. But what's so great is the only other pedal I can think of that does this in a similar way is the Pelotar. It's blending between two different fuzz circuits.
Right.
And I just love what that does. There's no other way to get some of these textures and sounds without that. And I really think they did a fantastic job on it. It looks great. It's got a pink LED. You know, I mean, what more do you need? It comes with a power crystal. It's got everything you need. It's fantastic.
Very cool. And they're doing that as a like a GoFundMe style thing, right?
I didn't actually know that, but it doesn't matter that much. But basically the way they're doing it is an independent pre-order situation, and either they'll sell enough to make it a full production item or they won't. So I think they have a month to sell 150, I believe, of them.
Yeah, that's right. So as we're recording this podcast, and we're actually recording this podcast a week before it comes out, because the week this is coming out, the Bronkoff podcast series is running all week. But as we're recording this, they've sold 30 pedals, which is 20%, because they need to hit 150, and they have 1 month and 1 day. So that's a decent first day for them. $199 USDs for the pedal.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks cool. It looks great. Definitely go and, dear listener, go and check out Blake's demo of the Aquabats Overdrive pedal. It looks very cool. I'd actually never heard of Rude Tech before. And I clicked on their webpage, and the first thing that they have is three muffs in one. So yes. Already I'm interested in this.
Yeah, Jesse is a great dude. He's going to be coming on the Tone Mob podcast here. I don't know when exactly his episode will drop, but we're going to be recording it very soon. And he is the one that helped us do, because he is a literal like he comes from the rocket industry. Like he literally is a rocket scientist.
Okay, so, cool.
Yeah, and he's a really funny guy, smart dude, and he also did the enclosure design for the slice of pie. So yeah,
I see, oh, very yes. cool.
So yeah, good guy, cool circuits. Really enjoy Jesse. He's a lot of fun.
Looks like this is the only pedal on Rudetech site at the moment. So the only pedal he does.
They used to have more, I'm pretty sure, back in the day, but I think that one took over the spotlight and made it kind of not worth it to do anything else. So, yeah.
I see. Well, very cool, very cool. I've been talking about the my hunt for vintage stuff. That is really starting to take off for me, and I've suddenly become very concerned that I have some modern pedals, and I no longer want...
It's concerning. It's worth being concerned about, yes.
It's. I'm at a point now where I'm like, well, it's not that I want everything to be vintage, because to be honest, a lot of vintage, you know, sought-after vintage effects, they're not going to work well on bass, so I need stuff that's going to work well on bass, but I want stuff that's designed old school at heart. Like it used to be that I wanted my delays and reverbs to be all singing and dancing. I wanted them to have pitching octaves and infinite sustain and weird shimmery things and stuff like that. But now I just want like a reverb. Well, I don't want a reverb for bass, you know, for a start. Mm-hmm. But if I did, it would have to be a tank. And now, you know, for delay stuff, I'm like, well, I will only use the DM2 because, you know, that's at least that's a cool... It sounds like old delay, and that's what I want. But of course, that's now branching over into looking for... It's easy to do with modulation because there's a sort of sought-after vintage tone. But when it comes to fuzzes and drives, you as a bass player, you can't necessarily go for the same vintage stuff. So I'm looking for cool things that just try and be simple and old school. You know, they don't have to be vintage, but they have to be simple and old school. I don't want all the bells and whistles anymore. I want that simplicity. So, you know, I'm putting you on the spot here, Blake, but I'm looking for like good fuzz recommendations for bass stuff with like, you know, potentially good clean blends and things like that. And I'm looking for good distortion and overdrive, like low sort of transparent overdrives that potentially work with bass that don't go too far. They don't need to give me everything. I don't want any modern sound. So you know, what do you think? What do you got for me?
Yeah, this is tricky. This is a tricky one, because if you want something really vintage appearing and, you know, kind of committed to that aesthetic and that build style, you really do struggle to find things that work well in that low end register. I never really thought about it until you mentioned it, but off the top of my head, there aren't any builders that I can think of that tick both of those boxes, like both with the old school aesthetics and with the, you know, the favoritism of the low end. But there's a builder you really should check out. I have not played his stuff, but I know some that have. But you'll know what I mean when I say this. And maybe you're already aware. But if you really want that commitment to the old school build style, you should check out Reeves Electro. You've seen Reeves Electro?
I'm not sure. It doesn't ring a bell. I'll Google it whilst you're talking about it.
Yeah, Marcus, he's a... I don't know him. I don't have any personal connection. Wampler introduced me to his stuff. But you want to talk about artwork in circuit, in like circuit building. It's so beautiful on the inside. It's so awesome. And he's a small builder that I would imagine if you were to hit him up, he would probably build you something more bass focused, because, you know, that's just a matter of component values, right? And emphasizing the proper range, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, exactly. So I enjoy the sort of acid etch style artwork that he goes for on these.
Yeah. Do you have a gut shot? That's what you really need to see, is the guts.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I will have a look. These look great. I'm absolutely going to reach out to this guy. And I love that he does like a he does some classic pedal chassis as well. We've got the fuzz face and he does the tone bender as well in his own sort of, you know, versions of pedals.
Oh, and but... this was totally an accident. I forgot that he was in the UK.
I wondered why the pricing was in such round figures when I was looking at it. So it must be.
Totally forgot that he was in the UK. So that actually works extra well, right?
Oh, there you go. Well, yes. Yes, sort of. Yeah, I guess it does. I've got like a, I've got a PayPal account that has a bunch of money in dollars in it. I think Gitana's got paid in dollars once, like a lot of years ago. And I recently rediscovered that we had this PayPal account. And I was like, oh, I could convert this back, but PayPal are going to charge a fee. So why don't I spend it on something in America? Mm. I know that that logic is flawed. I know that there's going to be import charges. But let me live in the illusion of the free money. So
yeah, I'm sending you, and this does nothing for the listeners, but I just sent you a link to our little messenger chat.
Yes, I've clicked on it.
Go ahead and hit that, and I want to hear your reaction.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is like, this is taking point-to-point wiring to a whole nother level. I can't believe how organized this is.
It's art, man. It really is.
Wow. Yep. Wow, yeah, this is fantastic.
I'm sure he could hook you up with something for the bass, and it would tickle your vintage, I don't know what it, your vintage desires, I guess. I don't know what to say there. That doesn't sound extra weird.
Yes, I am absolutely going to check them out. A company, you know, a company I keep coming back to, and I talked about them briefly, I think, on last week's episode, dear listener. It's Brown Amps. It's Brown with an E on the end. Are you familiar with them?
I know about the protein, and that's pretty much it. I don't know anything else that they have.
They had totally passed me by. It was literally like last week on the podcast, I was like, vintage styled fuzzes, Google, you know, and they came up with their T4 fuzz. And I checked out like the rest of the site. I was like, oh yeah, there's the protein. They put half of the protein into their carbon as well. They're cracking like really, really old school tread looking stuff that sounds great, and everything seems to be very vintage inspired. They even have a podcast as well. There is the Brown Amps podcast. So it looks like it ran in 2021. It looks like the last episode came out in September 2021. But you know, I'm gonna probably listen to these later, and maybe I should give them a shout and get them on an episode, because especially if they're experienced podcasters as well. But yeah, it looks like they do their carbon, their fuzz, and their protein. It's just three pedals, but yeah, they look fantastic, and all the demos that I've seen, they look like they sound great as well.
So I was just thinking about I'm sorry, I'm racking my brain trying to think about like bass focused you know, more boutique-y effects, and I can't believe I didn't think of this, probably because his aesthetic is not at all the vintage flavor that you're going for. Well, I guess it is kind of tattoo inspired in some of the designs, so maybe that sort of qualifies. But my friend Ryan Fuzzrocious, like, he makes sure that everything he does, because he's primarily a bass player. And so he makes sure that everything he does works well across the tonal spectrum. And I have never played a Fuzzrocious pedal that didn't sound good on guitar, baritone, and bass. So Fuzzrocious is always one to keep an eye on for that stuff.
Oh, I see. Now that is, I tell you what, Fuzzrocious are a brand that, you know, that we've got stuff of, that they've sent us stuff before, and it's just, I think Matt ends up keeping it all. And I just haven't even thought about them. I haven't even thought about them for ages. But yeah, so I'm like, I'm looking now and I'm like, man, I don't know any of the things in this range now. There are so many companies, and it's easy to sort of forget one and then you know, just never see anything from them again for 2 years. But
yeah,
they I love the look and the style of their stuff, and they have such a substantial range of gear as well. Is there a fuzz that you would recommend within the Fuzz Rocious arsenal?
My favorite Fuzz Rocious pedals are the limited edition ones that we did together, the Typhon V1 and V2, because
of course,
well, they were the concept that I came up with, so why wouldn't they be my favorite?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But the cattail is a rodent inspired distortion that sounds really, really good on bass.
Oh wow, yeah, even the demos are even on bass on the
A bass demo for every single pedal that he has. I'm 99% sure of that.
This is exactly what I was looking for and exactly what I am going to order after we finish podcasting.
There you go.
Something from this range. It's done. This discussion is done now. You have found the answer. This is exactly what I was looking for. Somewhere where I can actually look at a number of demos of products with bass. Basically, because I was like, you can't get anything. The only bass stuff, the only bass drives, distortion, things like that, fuzzes that you can get on the market are modern sounding. They're for metal people. They're for active basses or five strings. All the demos, if you find demos, they're going to be scooped and they're going to sound awful. And so because I don't want that, because I want like something clangy and rocky, I want something that sounds like an amp turned up really loud, not like a distortion. You know, or you know, if I want a fuzz, I want it to be old school and you know, not modern and gated. It needs to be big and open sounding. The only thing I could look for is like maybe if I can just find something with a clean blend, because you know if it's got a clean blend on there, I can probably keep some of those fundamentals. That was the best I could hope for on the internet. So this is so much better than that. I'm going to be checking these out. The Moth looks fantastic. I mean, obviously, dear listener, I'm just going on aesthetics here, but the Moth looks great. You know, there's the Demon, the Grey Stash. That seems like something I should buy. There's a lot of stuff here that I should.
The little fella, I actually did a baritone demo, and I've played it with bass. Sounds great. That's a slightly tweaked version of the Demon. I love that. The little fella sounds so good. And then the there's another one that I was thinking of. I was trying to think of what are my favorite bass pedal. Oh, yes. I forgot. I don't know if they're still selling this pedal, but I know there are at least some used. But the Solid Gold Effects Beta Deluxe is such a good bass drive.
You sent me one years ago.
Oh, did I? Okay.
Yeah.
I used to work with them back in the day. So yeah.
Years ago, you sent me a little goodie box of bits and bobs. And the Beta Deluxe I used as a preamp on the end of my board for a couple of years. I thought it was great because it did sound, because you had control, so much control of the mids, you could shift them around, they were on little toggles. There was so much, you could shape it so it sounded like a big clangy old SVT if you were just using it as like the last thing in your chain, just as a preamp. So yeah, I always thought that was a fantastic pedal.
Yes, and I the reason I thought of them kind of last second there was because A, I love that pedal on bass, and B, I know they've got better distribution over there in Europe now, so.
Yes, they do. Yeah. And in fact, you know, we actually work with them quite a lot because they're distributed in the UK by a rather fantastic company called ADG. Because they're so well distributed over there, and we have such a good relationship with the wonderful Bruce from there, he always makes sure that we get the Solid Gold bits and bobs when they come out. I mean, the Imperial Mark II for me was still like, that was one of my favorite fuzzes of last year. That was a fantastic unit, and everything should have big faders on it. There's no reason to not have big faders.
Absolutely.
Yes, it is very cool indeed. Oh, I'm gonna spend some money this evening. But,
if you need advice on where to spend your money, I can help you. I just realized while I was going over the Fuzz Rocious website, I realized there must be some sort of subliminal thing going on right now because I'm wearing that gray Fuzz Rocious shirt and I didn't even realize it. I was like, oh, I have that shirt. Oh, not only do I have it, I'm literally wearing it right now. So, yeah. Big fan.
There you go. Well, we're running out of time on this week's episode. So we're gonna head over to our Patreon now on patreon.com/guitarnerds, where you can join us, dear listener, for an entire extra episode every week. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. The dollar tier gets you this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special and our back catalog. $10 gets you the lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. You can find us on your favorite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds and Blake Weiland. Farewell. Daniel Walker, Ben Harder, Jonathan Brown, Holly Simpson, John Conaway, Eric Vaughan, Russell Healing, Paul Drew, Peter Peer, Ty Allen, Yogi the Guitarist, Kyle Harris, Joe Hart, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Shane Molloy, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Eitzler, Gavin Van der Linden, Andy Manley, Robert Butterworth, Scott Hutton, Marcus Alkanowaki, Simon Milbourne, Stuart Robson, Christian Van Hansen, Keith Adams, Eric File, Jack Tuckmore, Joe Putty, James Store, Abe Matthews, Ken Sayers, Kytopia the Man, John Anglin, Ross Edwards, Stephen Bourne, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Losek, Derek Rich, Blake Weiland, Rob Norvin, Shady Short, Steve Merkel, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Robin Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, and Moog Grammy.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.